Head coach Derek Keenan thinks he feels it's a better situation, especially coming off a bye week to be at home. We got two of the Rush players here joining me in studio. Defenders Ryan Dilks and Aaron Sorchetti, who also plays a little bit on the offense as well. Gents, how you doing?
Always a pleasure being here, and thanks for having us again.
Yeah, I'm doing well. Thank you.
Now, we're going to get to lacrosse first in a second, but I do it now. Aaron, you're a personal trainer, are you not, as well? Like, you train a lot of big-time athletes out west, do you not?
Yeah, I was in the sports performance industry for a couple of years, yeah.
And you were training, you were working, like, with some NFL guys and NCAA guys?
We did a lot of elite athletic training, yes, designed for professional athletes, but we didn't really focus on that as much. It was from every age group, you know, youth, high school, collegiate, and pro.
For a guy who plays pro sports, does that enhance you as a player, having that background? Like, do you find that you're maximizing your off-season training?
You know, I'm looking at the guys that I'm training, and to be honest with you, they're putting in a lot more effort. They got, you know, bigger bodies and everything, but definitely I try to apply it to my own game and try to spread the knowledge as much as possible throughout our program.
So, Dilks, do you when you found out that his background, do you guys ask him for training tips or what?
Yeah, we made that mistake last year when we first moved in, and I won't forget some of the workouts he put us through, stuff I've never seen before, just a lot of stuff that you wouldn't even see. It's just with a lot of resistant training, a lot of not necessarily heavy weights, but just repetitive nets, and by the end of it, you're just covered in sweat. So it was.
What was the hardest thing he put you through?
Probably.
I put him through a lot of circuits, so I try to focus on metabolic workouts,
okay.
Yeah. Rather than, you know, hitting a bench press or whatever, and resting. It's more about
my favorite
getting that. Yeah, exactly. It's more about getting that next exercise in to basically keep that level of intensity up, and I try to make it as game related as possible.
So I was going to ask, for lacrosse, if you had to do a quick circuit thing, you know, to keep it simple for our audience, what would be, like, would you do 3 or 4 different exercises in a row? How would you do it?
To be honest, I like to break it down into rounds. Okay. So having 4 or 5 exercises per round within a round, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And keeping it consistent, but ultimately I'm trying to focus on keeping it as game related. I don't want to be you know, training a offensive lacrosse player like a defensive player or a goalie. You know, it's muscle groups are all the same, so you need to strengthen them, but how you strengthen them is the most important part.
And in lacrosse, the footwork for an, because you'll play transition, you'll play both ways, but how much different is the footwork for an offensive guy to a defensive guy in lacrosse? I know, Ryan, you're you know, an all-star defensive guy, so what do you feel is the best strength as a defensive guy footwork-wise?
Well, definitely having quick feet helps, right? Because you're always reacting off the offensive player. So as an offensive player, you can just go and kind of like do your own thing up there. Well, you always have to be on your toes on defense because you don't know when the guy's in cut to the net. You don't know when he's going to try and juke you. So it's a lot of more being in the right position and keeping your angles the right way the whole time you're out there.
Are hips more important for a defensive guy?
You know, it's a lot of core strength, I feel. And like Ryan said, it's you're basing your athleticism off the offensive guy's athleticism. Whatever he's doing, you have to do and follow them. And it's kind of like boxing, you know. You go out for a spurt of time and you really hit him hard, and then you got to get off and you got to do it all over again. So it's broken into rounds, and that's kind of what I try to design my workouts to.
Ryan Dilks, Aaron Sorchetti from the Edmonton Rush, join us. One guy who you guys are both going to have to match up against at some point is whether you're on the floor with him defending him or watching where he's going to distribute the ball is Sean Evans for Calgary. I led the league, set a league record this year with 130 points. Smaller guy, from my vantage point, watching him over the years I've done it, his conditioning and ability to always be going at a high level seems to be the hardest thing I see guys have issue with. Ryan, you've matched up against him. What's the biggest challenge in facing Evans?
He's very unpredictable. Like, he, for a little guy, you think like, okay, I got him, but then for a little guy, he'll swim you pretty easily and go to the net, and that's, you know, like, oh, I'm 2 steps behind him. And so not only does he have a good shot, but he can pass, so you can't give him time, but at the same time, he's got that quick step. So it's one of those time and space players you have to eliminate pretty quick.
Rather competitive little SOB too, it seems.
Very shifty.
We've had some moments where he's not
he's definitely a talented player, just like everybody else on Calgary. It's going to be it's going to be an interesting first round.
Everybody says that Curtis Dixon one-on-one is maybe the best forward in the league. Why?
I guess I have to agree, because I don't know, he sits 200-pound frame, one of the fastest steps in the league and one of the hardest shots in the league. And I don't know if you've tried to play defense on him, but the ball does not come out of his stick. It doesn't matter how hard you hit his stick, it just does not come out. So he's just got a strong hand on it, and it's someone you always have to play the body on and kind of give him the worst shot possible.
Yeah, exactly. Fundamental defense comes down to that situation where you have to be very, very fundamental. Yeah.
Now, the rush defense, I was looking at the forced turnover stats. I think you guys had six of the top seven guys. Rubish has led the league for a long time, and I know that Chris Corbeil and Ryan, you've told me over the years how you guys are always trying to pick his brain on, you know, why are you doing it? You know, John Lintz is now in the top 10. As overall defense, that's something you guys excel at. Dixon, so when you can get, when you jar the ball on a forced turnover out of the guy's pocket, where do you, like, without giving away maybe too many secrets, is there a certain angle or a certain position you want to hit on their stick to jar the ball loose? Like, does it come loose easier?
With his stick, no. I swear, I think we've tried almost everything to get that ball to the stick, and it doesn't work. So we have given up on trying to whack his stick. We just say, forget the stick, man up, chest on chest with him, and play defense. Yeah, exactly. Other guys, obviously, like, it might be a little easier to get their stick out, but
Body positioning is first and foremost, and then comes the stick.
But where where do you hit it on the stick to jar the ball loose usually?
Well, one little thing I like to do is when they have two hands on your stick, I like to try and get my stick in between his arms to get him to take one hand off his stick.
Okay.
Because you can do a lot less with one hand on your stick than two, right? So when he's got one hand on his stick, then my options start open. I can try and they call it can opener.
Yeah.
I'm sure you know what that is. Or just try and get him to swim and get him to come over top, and then that might open things up for a whack.
Or even allow the double guy to come in and hit his stick too. You know, try to open him up, get him a little more vulnerable where he can't pass it. He can't really have enough hold on his stick, and then the next guy will come in and take it down, hopefully.
Sarkedi and Dilks joining me, Edmonton Rush, Friday night at home against the Calgary Roughnecks, game one of the West Final. Mark Matthews, when he came in, said he improved a lot by going up against the Rush defense. You know, it's widely deemed that you guys collectively as a group are the best defense in the league. Your offensive guys this year really took their offense to a new level. Four guys with 35-plus goals, and it would have been three probably with 40 if Church didn't miss the last game of the season. How has the offense evolved in practice since you've been here, Ryan? And how much more difficult is it now with this offensive group compared to maybe 2 years ago?
It's got to be the buy-in. Like, Coach Jeff McComb and Keenan made a system, and we made a rule that not one guy's holding on the ball. Everyone's moving the ball. Everyone's a ball carrier, and it's starting to show. Like, you don't know who's going to attack at one time. The ball's getting swung across the top, left and right, and then before you even know it, there's a guy open in the middle. So definitely just everyone is on the same page on offense this year, and nobody's being a ball hog. So it's fun to watch.
Which one of your teammates is the hardest guy to go? Because I watch you guys practice, and because you don't practice a lot of the time, when you do practice together, the two groups go at each other fairly competitively. Who is the most competitive forward in practice?
I would say Zach Greer. He'd be one of the top guys that really is committed to the system, committed to being a better player, a better teammate. And I think he's one of the guys that definitely works one of the hardest.
Oh, yeah, no gear Greer, we call him.
Yeah.
No gear Greer?
Yeah, we have a shoot-around in Zamora, just helmets and gloves, and it's hard to play defense when you don't can, like, whack their stick. So every time Greer has no equipment on, it seems like he's cutting through the middle lane trying to get the ball, trying to dodge and stuff. Right? Oh, no pads on, eh, Greer? Yeah. So no Greer Greer.
Maybe that's why I said that.
Who is there? Because a lot of times when you have competitive players, you know, at times, you know, you want a challenge. The only way you're going to get better in practice is going hard. Who do you guys have to calm down sometimes in practice? Who goes maybe too hard?
Well, on defense, it has to be Brett Mitski. I've never heard the offense complain so many times about getting slashed in the wrist and then getting hold in practice and stuff like that. So they're always giving Steve heck, but
he's a savage.
He's a savage, yeah, that's what we call him. And then
he's probably gained since I saw him get drafted. He's that guy who got drafted. He's a third round guy, and has, you know, evolved into an all star. He's got to be pushing 225 now, and like he's gained about over the 4 years, probably 20-25 pounds of muscle.
Solid weight, yeah. He's definitely one of those guys as well that works really hard off season on season, and he's committed to the team. He's committed to the program.
He does a lot of Olympic weightlifting, like crazy workouts that you see the those big Olympic athletes do.
So a lot of deadlifting.
A lot of
maybe crazy. Some hybrid workouts with my stuff, maybe.
Brett, stuff there? There.
Who's the best chirper in practice for the Rush?
Do we chirp that much?
Chirp. Matthews tries to throw some guys daggers in there.
With that haircut, really?
Yeah, I know. Well, you forget about with a helmet on. Yeah, you see him at the bar later, then you remind that little
it's all in good fun, you know. It's
oh, yeah, no, chirping's supposed to be in good fun.
Yeah, I don't know.
No, but even the chirps are just like, they. I guess some guys try to make them bad to make everybody laugh, you know what I mean? Rather than make a, yeah. I don't know.
Jared Davis is pretty funny. He's always got a good one-liner every now and then, so.
Who is the emotional leader of your team when you get into serious times of the game, whether you need a funny thing said or that time where you need someone to stand up and maybe chew a guy out? Who are the emotional leaders on your team?
Has to be Chris Corbiola, one of the best captains I've ever had. His speeches before the game, he's always saying the right things, getting me fired up. He's calming us down. Sometimes he gets a little fired up too, but it's good to see emotion on your captain. It brings you back to the game and tells. So it's kind of a group effort. Jimmy Quinlan gets fired up. I don't know if you've seen him on the bench. He gets pretty.
A lot of people contribute for sure. Like I think it starts with that one person, whether it's Coach Keenan or Corbiola in the locker room. And it just radiates amongst the group.
Quinlan and Corbiola, I wrote an article in the Edmonton Journal today about the game, and both to a man said, yeah, we really respect Calgary, but there is a distinct dislike amongst these two teams. What is it about the Roughnecks that just you can't stand, Ryan?
How much time do we have?
We got a lot.
Oh, there's a lot. We just don't get along. Like, we just don't see eye to eye. If it's them setting dirty pets on us, it's the end of the whistles, little garbage that they're doing to us. Or
style of play, I guess. They're the intimidator factor, I guess, and we're just kind of get down to the point, you know, play it within our systems and stuff, and maybe they try to get in our heads a little bit too much, and I don't know.
There seems to be a lot of, as you guys mentioned, in the final few seconds of a set, there seems to be a lot of sometimes diving on both ends. Of guys, you know, trying to draw penalties from the officials. How is that going to play into it? Because, you know, Evan's a smaller guy who, when he has the ball, man, he's hard to knock down. Then suddenly, when you go to hit him late and draw, you know what? He's great at flopping when it's the right time. How do you, as a defender, do you learn to discipline yourself in the high intensity game to not fall prey to that?
That's a great question. I mean, I've been victim of that in the past, playing with him in the Ontario League back home, but. Definitely, it's part of our game plan and part of our system is to not fall into that kind of stuff. And I feel that a lot of our guys learning from those mistakes and bouncing back from previous situations where that stuff has happened, I feel that just being committed to what we're preaching in the locker room and not falling into that kind of
play. Yeah, I agree. It's something like you got to recognize as a player. That like, you know, he's known for that stuff, so it's not even, don't even go near him. Don't even give him a chance to flop. So try and keep it in our hands, not the ref's hands.
Yeah. Chris Corbiola told me yesterday that it is something that he's brought up every now and then, because he said last year the biggest disappointment for him was they didn't win a championship for Wendy, because unfortunately people kind of knew what the, you know, eventually, you know, she was going to pass away. You pencil that in now with Michelle, your goaltender, Aaron, his girlfriend, and, you know, she's dealing with cancer. How have you been able to use that as a positive for your group?
I think it's, like you said, it's just brought us closer as a team. It just shows like how much we care for each other. We got Boldy's back. We've got Derek's back, our coach. And like, he knows it. He loves being at the dressing room. And honestly, when Boldy's with us, it's tough to tell that you can even see something's going on. So it's good to see him get his mind off it. And he knows we have all his support and anything he needs. So it's like it really brought us together.
Well, especially because when he found out, he didn't even tell you guys for the first game. And I think that was the game in, I don't know if it was in Toronto, he stood on his head, made, you know, only allowed 6 or 7 goals, and then told the team the next week. What was kind of your reaction? You know, you guys are young guys, and, one of your girlfriends shouldn't be battling breast cancer for the second time.
Definitely one of those things that I've never had ever in my whole lacrosse career had to, you know, face that. Just a teammate coming out and saying, you know, something that's so, you know, just taxing. You know, it's one of those things where I don't even know. I'm speechless when I think about it because
it's just out of our control. And it's just like, wow.
The only thing we can do is really keep them occupied and upbeat and just on track to be who they are and who we know they can be. And I think that ultimately will just make everything better in their life.
Does it make the team, this might sound odd, but, you know, the connection more of a human connection amongst guys? Because, you know, there's a lot of camaraderie naturally in sports. You know, guys are in there, you're battling hard, you got each other's back. But this kind of, you know, really puts sports on the back burner a little bit. And maybe the conversations now around the dinner table are a little bit different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, like I've been on a whole bunch of teams now. And, like, yeah, you can talk about, like, lacrosse or hockey and stuff like that as a team. But, like, this team is different. Like, this team, like, I know every guy personally. I know what he's doing. I know how he's feeling. And it's a really, it's quite an amazing feeling to know that you have 23 brothers in the change room with you that all care just as much as you do for them. So it's really a special team.
Very genuine. It's a lot of good guys. Very, very, very good guys.
And that can motivate a team even more. And, you know, the reality in pro sports, and when I look at the Rush roster and I see, you know, a lot of all-stars, really good team. You've won, as I mentioned, 30 games. No one's even 30 years of age. Maybe Bull just turned 30, so he's the fossil on the team, and he's only 30. So, yeah. You know, you a team that's built to have a lot of success, but we've seen in pro sports a lot of really good teams never have that. Do you sense a little bit of pressure? Like, guys, we can't waste these opportunities. We got to get a championship.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like we're all coming into our prime. Like everyone says, between 25 and 30 is your prime years where you're experienced and you know your body's ready to go. So we don't want to wait any longer. We're tired of waiting. I know the fans are tired, and we really want to win this year. So
yeah, we owe it to the organization, the fans, I mean everybody involved. Yeah,
they have the right pieces of the puzzle this year, and like there's not much other they can do other than just let us do it.
Well, one change on your team that, you know, it happened at the trade deadline, and some people thought, oh, okay, whatever. You know, he's not even a healthy player. He's not even getting in the lineup regularly in Calgary, but he's a former 7th overall pick. Dinsdale's come in for you guys and really seemed to added a burst of energy to your team. What do you feel he's brought the most, Adrian?
You know, I think it's beyond the level of commitment. I think it just goes past that to his overall prepping for the game and just wanting to be a part of the team, you know, and having that right side there for him. Guys, he's grown up with playing in Coquitlam. I think that adds some more confidence to the game and his game, which has helped him tremendously performing in the past games he's had.
Well, I know you guys got a lot of motivation to beat Calgary. His motivation's maybe a little bit different. Anytime you get traded, discarded like that, and really because he wasn't even really given an opportunity there, he's got to be frothing at the mouth for Friday.
Oh, for sure. You know, he's waiting to get back at him, and he's been playing well for us. Like I said before, everyone's a ball carrier on our offense, and it's showing out there. Like, he's putting 2 or 3 goals up a night, and he's moving the ball well.
And he's been having fun with it. You know, yeah. Our guys have made sure that he's not only playing with confidence, but he's having fun out there. And I think that's a major contributor to his success so far.
Have either one of you played with McIntosh prior to this year?
Against him.
Nope.
Never played with him. Rookie comes into the league and scores 86 points. You know, Matthews came in and had 69. And now, granted, you know, he didn't have a Matthews to play with, so I understand all that. But has McIntosh exceeded your guy? Did you know he was this good?
No, I had no idea. Just playing him in the summer, in summer ball against him. And he looked pretty good. Like, he looked like a good athlete. And, like, hearing what Jarrett Davis had to say about him, and it was all positive. So I was excited that we drafted him. And his season completely blew me out of the water. Like, he's a hell of a player and, like, even a better guy off the floor, too.
Yeah, you couldn't have said it any better. He's definitely contributed a lot. And I don't think anything has gone unnoticed because the work he's put in is shown, you know.
can he? He might have the quickest hands in tight, especially on a quick stick that I've seen. Do you guys try to get tips from that? Like, is there even any way to say, hey, I know you guys play defense. It's not like you're on the power play, you know, planning a quick stick at any point, anytime soon. But do you ever, you know, talk to guys like how do you get that good? Because there's a lot of great offensive guys in the league who can't do that.
I try to get the tips to defend that, to stop yeah. that. I ask them, how can I yeah. stop that? But
yeah, there's times where I don't know if Mark is shooting the ball or yeah. passing it to Benny on the trees. So, if I was him, I'd be flinching down the way of the shot, and that's, you know, it's hitting you in the head because it was a pass. So it's pretty impressive. I'm going with, I think that he was born with it, I guess, because it's unnatural.
It is. Like, I think for a lot of people maybe are, you know, new to lacrosse and they watch it, I don't think they realize how hard it is in that motion to receive it and yeah. release it that quickly, especially because Matthews passes the ball almost as hard as he shoots the ball.
Close to 100 for sure, miles per hour. But also, too, like the angle that he's receiving that pass at and just stuffing it in the net at that angle is pretty remarkable.
Yeah. Not mentioning all the stits in the way from the defense yeah. and the bodies in the way, so you got to trap the ball in the way. So it's definitely pretty hard. Like you said, if you've never done it before, it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Ryan, I know you're one of the guys on the man down. You're taking on Calgary. They got the best power play in the league. How do you slow it down? No team's been able to do it. Obviously, I know you got to stay out of the box is what the coach will preach, but penalties are going to happen at some point. How can you limit the great looks from their power play?
So we just have to take control and not let them dictate what they want to do. We know a lot of plays, they like to run, they like to put a guy in the middle sometimes, and Evie likes to shop on that right side. So we really can't let them do what they want to do. We really want to force them out of their comfort zone and end up with a shot maybe they didn't plan to, an outside shot, and when we're in the right shooting lane. So it's definitely something we have to adjust to. So guys like Evie and them can't shop all day on the right side. Ditson can't unload on that right side. So it's not an easy task, but we're going to have to do it.
Ryan Dilks, Aaron Sorchetti joins me at Edmonton Rush, taking on the Roughnecks Friday night. I've noticed this year, and maybe it's just by accident, there seems to be more block shots. Are guys just stepping into the shooting lanes more? Have you been instructed by the coach? Because there's not a lot of padding in lacrosse. To me, it's rather ludicrous to want to block a shot on purpose. Is it just accidental, or guys getting in the lanes more, or are more defenders trying to make a conscious effort to block shots?
No, I think guys are trying to get in the lanes more. I remember earlier in this year when we started off 0-2, and then we won a few, and then we lost a few, and Coach Keenan called us out. He said, we're not bringing enough grit. We don't have enough jam out there. We're not getting in the lanes. We're not winning those battles. And he was right. Like, as soon as we started throwing everything out on the line, start getting in shooting lanes, and like when a guy blocks a shot on defense, it fires everyone up. Like, Johnny Lentz blocked so many shots out there. If you ever seen that guy's legs, he's got the ugliest legs in all of Edmonton. They're so bruised up and cut up because he's always in the lane. And it brings momentum to your team that guy's willing to sacrifice his bod for you guys.
I know. To me, it's like I see in hockey, and they block the shots, but they got knee pads and everything else. Yeah. And the rubber ball in lacrosse, and I've been hit by a lacrosse ball. I've hit by a puck. Now, great, because I grew up playing hockey way more, I cringe more of a lacrosse ball than I would a hockey puck.
Yeah. Definitely should. A lot more open areas in the upper body area. You'd be surprised.
Oh,
our shoulder pads are pretty small. Like there, yeah. There's a lot of gaps on our shoulders, so.
Yeah, the defenders, and that's the funny thing, the offensive guys wear more padding because usually they're defending off cross-checks and stuff. Sure. But now with the emergence of asking guys to go in lanes, do you think defensive guys are going to start wearing a little bit more padding, or does that restrict you?
To be honest, I don't think anybody's going to change. I think they're just going to deal with it.
Yeah, you think it would be the smart thing to do, but I don't think we're knuckle draggers back there. Just
so the offensive guys are the bright guys? Is that what I'm hearing?
I guess so. I don't know.
Who is the smartest guy on your team?
I'm going to have to say probably Chris Corbeil or Matt Madrotti.
Really?
Yeah, they're pretty into the business.
Yeah, but Corbeil, like, he's a huge fan of Nicolas Cage. He can't be that smart.